Monday, March 24th, 2008, upon further review, episode number 57. This episode we deal with bottled water, cartoon mice, and Dickensian short stories. That's right, it's the alphabetical show at upon further review. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And this is episode number 57. We need to start, first of all, with a little bit of an apology. It has been a few weeks since our last show. And the bottom line really is that over the next couple of months, we're probably going to be on about a two-show-a-month schedule. We'll try to do it more than that if we can, but we have a newborn.
Also, Greg has been overwhelmed with a semester of four classes.
So. Yes, four classes of grading, which is an incredible and over amount in college. So I think I should really review.
An incredible and over amount.
I basically wanted to express the fact that it's too much and I shouldn't have four classes.
That's how bad it is. You can't speak
it's
anymore.
It's just really, you know. I think I should review grading and just give it.
I don't think we need an episode for that.
Yeah.
I think you'll give it a zero probably, right?
Probably. Or an F, you know, just to keep it consistent. So, but we have missed doing the show. We definitely wanted to be doing the show earlier than this, and we're glad that we're back. We want to thank everybody, as always, for listening and for downloading the show and for spreading the word to friends. And we did have some comments over the last few weeks from people. And the latest one was from our friend Idiosyncratic Idiot, who agrees with us about Colbert, who we reviewed in our last show. He says that he prefers John Stewart's subtlety, although he does like Colbert's coinage of neologisms. I knew I would get that right. Like truthiness, for example. And then homeopathy, he said it's hard for him to escape the fact that it's total BS because it doesn't make any sense that if you dilute a substance more and more, that the less of it would have more of an effect. And that was sort of our concern as well. And especially, I think, since we've had Lilo, who is on the mend, you'll be happy to know, and is doing much, much better since she went back to more conventional treatment, that also doesn't speak particularly well for the homeopathic method. Although, again, it might just have been our particular vet who wasn't doing it well. So, who knows? But in any case, we are glad to see everyone's commentary, and we encourage you to keep that kind of stuff up.
I've met a woman from Australia on the baby site that I go to, and I talked to her a little bit about what vaccinations are required.
Oh, yeah?
And she said nothing's required. She said, really, the only thing's required down here is voting. And I said, oh, well, yeah, I heard about that, you know, those people that, you know, will just vote randomly because they don't care. And she wrote back, yeah, we're one of those people. I'm like, okay, you didn't get that. I thought that that was a bad thing. But
yeah,
she
we don't
said
really care.
That it was $30 fine.
Oh, if they didn't vote?
Yeah, I would rather them just take a $30 fine. That's not a big deal, if that's it.
Yeah.
Then vote randomly.
So it's basically a way to get for the government to get more money.
Well, no.
So
I don't
get
think
10%
$30
of the rich populace. Like,
I don't think,
you know,
$30 is all that bad, actually. I think it's enough of an incentive, and if not, it's not too bad if you're gonna, if you don't care, just take the fee.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, I suppose so. We'd have to ask more about that. I didn't know about the $30 fine either, but that's interesting. So we have this week our usual set of three things to review. We're going to start out by reviewing bottled water.
In honor of World Water Day.
In honor of World Water Day, which is when? March 22nd?
Yeah.
World Water Day actually came out of the Rio talk on the environment, which was in 1992. And Clea and I have been thinking about doing this for a while. We drink a good amount of bottled water between the two of us. Then we're going to move on to talk about Walt Disney World. I was at a conference in Florida this past weekend where I was reading from my second novel, and we brought Senevine along with us and brought her to Disney World. So for the first time, Senevine got to see Disney World, and that meant that she got to see it approximately 35 years earlier than I did, because that was the first time I had ever been to Disney World, too. So we'll talk a little bit about that experience. The third thing we're going to be reviewing is a podcast which was submitted to us, which is Mr. Ron's Basement, and we will talk a little bit about that at the end of the show.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's start by talking about bottled water. And if you want to find out more about that World Water Day thing that we mentioned, you can go to www.worldwaterday.org. bottled water is a relatively recent phenomenon in terms of, you know, everybody walking around carrying a bottle with them. I'd say maybe only the past decade or so has it really exploded in the way that it has. And it used to be that you would think of things in bottles as being things that were worse for you, you know, sodas or maybe like sports drinks and Gatorade if you were an athlete. But generally, you get stuff in the bottles, it tended to be not as good for you unless you were getting maybe juice or something like that. And if you were getting water, it's just the kind of thing you would pour out of the tap or maybe put into a Brita filter or something like that. But there's been an explosion in water sales, in bottled water sales, particularly. Poland Spring is one of the big titans, but there's also Aquafina. There's Dasani, which, as it turns out, is actually just purified Atlanta tap water, I believe.
I don't know if they're still doing that, but it was a big controversy in London, I think.
Oh, okay. So that's what they had actually been doing. Then Deer Park is another one of the major ones, and there are other ones. Internationally, there's Volvic, I know, is a big one.
Did you say Evian already?
I didn't say Evian yet. That's the other one I was trying to think of, Evian 2, which is unfortunate because I really dislike the taste of Evian, and that's the U.S. Open's official water. So whenever you go there, that's what it is that you have to drink. Unbelievable. So
I think we told them that affected their rating.
Oh, that's right, because they had demanded Evian. I forgot about that. So that's the basic idea with that. Now, on the face of it, bottled water would seem to be something which is much more beneficial for us in terms of environment and health. You're not drinking sugar. You're drinking water. It's good to drink water. I sometimes laugh because I see these doctors and always, the key thing is to drink more water. You know, like we should basically just be drinking gallons of water every day to be better, apparently.
Right.
And so we should always drink more water. And so it would seem on the face of it to be a better thing. However,
for ourselves, but not for the environment.
But not for the environment. So why don't you talk about that? What are the concerns environmentally about bottled water?
To keep it brief, and again, we're not judging because we drink a lot of bottled water.
Yeah.
And we have no excuse because we live in New York City, which is rated one of the best tap waters in the country.
With some issues, though. I'll get to that. About the drug thing.
Well, but that's kind of more over the America, and I don't know if it's simply just in the New York City area, so we really don't have much of an excuse. Mainly the issue with bottled water is twofold. One, the creation of the plastic, and two, the acquiring of the water, the cleaning of the water, and the transporting of the water. And pretty much you can find anywhere on the internet, there's like a tree hugger site, and there's a bottled water is bad site, bottledwaterblues.com. And pretty much anywhere you go, they can give you like a calculator of how much it costs for one bottle of water. And pretty much what some people say is it costs 4 to 7 times the amount of water to produce a bottle of water because of transportation and because of all the production and because of all of the water that goes into producing the water.
The water. 60 million plastic bottles a day are disposed of in America alone, which is pretty staggering.
Well, yeah, everyone talks about the plastic, right? Poland Spring has this new commercial now where they have eco-friendly new bottles that use less plastic. Everyone talks about the plastic. What they don't talk about is all the water that's wasted that goes in the production of the bottling process.
And there's been a significant backlash against bottled water. For example, on this page, Bottled Water Blues. Did you get them that website?
No, I didn't.
So Bottled Water Blues, which is BottledWaterBlues.com. Bottled Water Blues is an anti-bottled water site, so you'll get more information about those sorts of things from them. And it's true that there's an enormous environmental impact, and that it's true that companies have spent, I mean, a lot of the companies that own these water places now, I think Dasani, for example, is owned by Coca-Cola. So a lot of soda companies figured out that people were going in a water direction, and they said, well, why don't we actually sell people water in that regard too? And so there's been a big backlash against it, and people have started talking about the wonders of tap water. Now, there's a couple things I have to say about that, because I do drink a lot of bottled water myself, and I have some concerns about the immediate pendulum swing back to all tap water all the time. Number one, tap water is not as healthy as all of the tap water advocates would claim. There was a recent study that showed that a lot of prescription drugs have been showing up in the water supply, and there are several reasons for that. The main reason is that as we excrete through various things I won't go into here because this is a family-friendly show, as we excrete prescription drugs that we drink into our water supply, that into the sewage system, that eventually leaches into the water supply. Now, nobody knows what the long-term impact of those medications in people whose systems were not intended to be having them, you know, that it's, wasn't diagnosed or
not,
prescribed for
it's
them.
It's not so much the excretion, honey, it's the flushing.
Well, there's the flushing. No, that's not true. There's a flushing part of it, but there's also the excretion they're saying is a bigger problem than they ever thought. And it was actually maybe a more significant problem than just flushing drugs down the toilet, which is its own big issue. And while we're on that subject, by the way, I never knew that this happened, but apparently lots of people flush drugs, unused prescription drugs down the toilet. Why? Yeah. I just always threw them out. Why would you flush drugs down the
because
toilet?
Because people can get to them in the garbage.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Mainly I've always you're supposed to do them with controlled substances. That's yeah. mainly what you're supposed to do them with.
I see. Well, still, I didn't. It wasn't even something that was on my radar screen. So that means that there is some significant contamination that is starting to show up in some tap water. And the second thing about it is that I don't think the tap water tastes as good. Sorry, I don't. I don't think New York tap water tastes as good. I know that the tap water in the home I grew up in Connecticut doesn't taste as good as bottled water. And there are different versions of bottled water with different tastes, by the way. Deer Park, I think, is probably considered to be the best in terms of filtration and all that sort of thing. But, you know, Poland Spring and Deer Park, you know, taste reasonably good. Now, obviously, there are many things that taste good and that are, you know, that you like that aren't necessarily good for you in the environment, and those things have to be weighed against each other. But I just want to throw up a cautionary flag that it's not automatic that, well, of course tap water is good and it's much cheaper and you should immediately throw, you know, all these cities that are rushing headlong to ban bottled water. Seattle
well,
just joined
filtering.
That group. Yeah, there's water filtering and things like that, but then that has its own limitations. You have to throw out the water filter. That means that it drives up the cost because it's not reusable. I mean, it's just things that need to be balanced against each other. And I think that it's unreasonable just for people to immediately say, ah, well, water bottles are all terrible and tap water is the best thing ever. It depends on the circumstances. And I think that the fact that a lot of the water filtration systems themselves have some age in them is a major issue there. So,
well, you know, there was on the Colbert Report, there was a guy, I was trying to find the information. I haven't been able to find it, which I guess is something about Colbert's website. He and his team created a machine that can filtrate out anything out of water, and it doesn't require any filtration. It doesn't require any chlorine. It doesn't require anything.
Oh, this is the guy who invented the Segway, right? And he was doing the new thing.
Oh,
yeah.
You also invented the Segway?
Yeah.
Oh, see? Wow. This guy's pretty amazing.
So that's cool. So yeah, absolutely. And that's now that I think is a good possibility where it could filter all of these things out. Obviously, the issue there is cost. And of course, the other thing about bottled water is, and I agree very much with Clea about this, the more that you increase the amount of water it takes to produce a bottle of water, the more that you're contributing to the problem. Because the truth is that we obviously have a significant water shortage in many areas of the world, and that's partially increased by people like ourselves using bottled water based upon the sort right. of environment of it. So I recognize that it's not like, you know, bottled water is the salvation at all. It's got major issues with it. I just want to point out that tap water also is not perfect, and that something in between probably needs to be the approach that we use. So maybe this guy's filter system would be the way to go.
Okay.
Possibly.
And then also just note that there is all that thing about what they say about the plastics and that could also be bad for us too.
Right. But you can recycle plastic, of course.
All right. So what's the rating?
I'm going to say a 6 for a bottle of water because of the limitations of the environment and things like that.
I'll give it a 4.
Wow. A 4, huh?
7. I think the only point of bottled water is convenience. I think we're a lazy society.
And trying to avoid prescription drugs. And the
honey, I think a lot of that's overblown and probably commercialized by the bottle industry for all we know. Huh. This is America. I wouldn't put it past them.
I see. Okay. Well, then, so a 5 then?
Sure.
All right. So a 5 for bottled water. And we'd be interested in hearing all of your thoughts about that topic, as always.
When you wish upon a star, make no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you.
Okay, next up on the docket is Walt Disney World. And you can go to find this at, actually, I think if you just type in Disney to any web browser, it will immediately bring you here because of the power of Disney. Disney World, DisneyWorld. Disney.go.com. And this will bring you to Walt Disney World, from which you can get to any of the 658 parks that Disney World has throughout the world.
Okay, no, this is Disney World. This is a specific park, Greg. Yep. Disneyland is the one in California. Disney World, with its multiple parks.
Yeah, but see, look, here's all the parks overview, see?
Yeah, that's all the parks just in Disney World.
Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, those are all the parks just in Florida, Greg.
Okay, fine. So all then right. I'm sure if you go there, you can also link to Disneyland and there are other 650
you
other
go to Disney.go.com and get to all of their things.
Right.
There's Disneyland, which is the first one in California. then Disney World, which is the second one in Florida. Then there's one in Paris and one in, I think, in Tokyo. And I don't know when those opened in respect to the other ones. So we went to Disney World.
Right.
We only went to the Magical Kingdom Park within Disney World. There are 6 different parks in Disney World now. And we just went to the Magic Kingdom one, mm-hmm. which is kind of the quintessential Disneyland experience with the Main Street and kind of like the little kids rides and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Now, for those of you who are not, I mean, I assume everybody has heard of Disney World before, but obviously Walt Disney was a cartoonist and an animator and produced a number of cartoons and which then became movies. And now Disney has become this enormous phenomenon where, as we know, they produce movies of all different kinds. They did the latest one they did was Ratatouille. And they did Mulan and Aladdin and a whole bunch of other ones.
Remember,
as well.
they do other things other than just like cartoons. And stuff
well,
like
no,
that.
But I mean, but I'm talking about cartoon movies. Like, oh, I know they okay. do other movies as well, but that's the sort of significant one is their animation, and that's kind of where they made their bones, so to speak. And then they came up with these amusement parks. Now, the original idea behind the amusement parks was Walt Disney wanted something that his children could remember, and so he came up with this idea of doing all these magical things from the cartoons and having the characters interact with people, you know, Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and Goofy and Donald Duck and people like that.
He also had lots of theories about creating like a very positive space and what that would mean for other people. So he kind of created like a small little city.
Right. And it is, when you go to Walt Disney World, actually, it's interesting because you have to
it's like its whole country.
Right. Like you have to drive there, park, then you take a tram to get to the ticket center. Then the ticket center, you can either take a ferry or a monorail to get to the park itself. So it's very much taking you into the next world, which I'm sure is all part of the plan, you know, that they wanted to really isolate you and have you just in this world when you're there. And it's the kind of thing that I think, and I had never been to Disney World before. I had this very traumatic experience as a child where I went to Florida and I was, you know, about an hour away. I think I was like 10 or 11 years old. And I was about an hour away, and my grandmother didn't take me because, you know, why would a 10-year-old want to go to Disney World? No, instead we got to watch, you know, older people playing shuffleboard. It's very traumatic.
To the mall, honey.
Very traumatic. I did get to go to the mall, and that was a hoot, let me tell you. it's okay, I've gotten over it. Not mm-hmm. So I'd never been to this before, and so it was a different experience for me. Now, Clea had been to Disneyland, which is in California, many, many times, and she had been to a number of the rides, and it was kind of fun going through this and watching her relive some of these things, like Pirates of the Caribbean, from which the movie was taken. She loved that ride, and so it was fun to watch her talk about Pirates of the Caribbean. And it is, when you get there, you've got all the characters walking around, you've got barbershop quartets, you've got, they run a couple of parades, they always have these seasonal things going on. Of course, they have rides. There's Space Mountain and Thunder Mountain, and it's a Small World After All, which is one of the older ones. The Haunted Mansion, the Jungle Cruise.
Just
I guess they've renovated part of it and added some new things. So, It is a whole kind of magical, mystical space, and it was interesting to watch it for me.
Yeah.
I must admit, having not been there before, that I didn't really get the whole point of it, and part of that might have been because I've never been that huge a Disney person. I mean, I like some of the movies. I certainly like Mulan. I thought that was clever, and I like some of the I like some of their movies. I like some of their cartoons, but I was never incredibly into Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, and I was always more of a Bugs Bunny type of guy and all that sort of thing. And as far as the rides are concerned, I hate roller coasters with a passion, so that takes away some of the rides from me. I love water rides. I love, you know, slides and things like that, but most of the rides I'm not a big fan of.
Greg is the kind of person where he would have liked to do the water parks, or you would have liked to do the small little kiddie rides where you sit in a little thing with a kid, like when Centipedes gets bigger.
Yes, not by myself. Thank you.
Well, but, you know, some people find it fun. And it kind of goes through telling the story of Cinderella or Snow White or Peter Pan. That's fine. But yeah, they do have some legitimate roller coasters that if you don't like roller coasters, then you wouldn't like. I'm not a big Disney person necessarily either. It's more just kind of the world that it creates and being in kind of this cool little world with the stylistic designs of, you know, the jungle area and that kind of stuff. So I like that. And then also in the past, they've been famous for their customer service. Like everywhere you go, people are smiling and they're very nice to you. It's like quintessential capitalist America gone right. You know, we were famous for our customer service and our great product, and that's what they delivered. I don't know if that's still necessarily the case as it gets bigger and bigger, you know?
Right. I don't know whether that's still going on. Yeah, I don't know. It certainly was still very clean. And it is true. We went there almost at peak season.
We went on Easter Day. on a Sunday.
Right.
So of all days, that it was a pretty packed
crowd. It was a pretty busy
crowd.
Day. And yet, despite the incredible size of the crowd, and there were just thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and I'm going to get to that when I get to the rating, the trash was practically non-existent. And
right.
I mean, that was pretty extraordinary. It was, you know, you could see a little bits of things, and then all of a sudden someone was zoomed by with a vacuum thing. I mean, I don't know what the overhead must be to run this place, but
well,
it was pretty crazy.
One of the things that our friend Christine said, we have our friends Christine and Christina who absolutely love Disneyland. They talked about how it was one of Disney's theories, actually, that if people enjoy their environment, they'll litter less.
Right, the reverse of the broken window theory.
Right.
If you break a window, other people are more likely to have windows broken or not care if their windows are broken. But if
right.
you keep everything clean, then there's kind of a societal pressure almost for
right.
everyone to keep things clean. And I do think there's something to that. I also got the impression, now I was not blown away as the greatest customer service ever, because for me
yeah.
it's always about whether it feels fake or not. If I feel like someone is trying to pretend to be, we talked about this all the way back with our review of Per Se. If we feel that someone is trying to be customer service friendly, then it comes off as forced and we don't like that. I didn't think that the customer service was bad
no.
here.
We just
but
didn't
I just
have
thought
much
it was
interaction with it, honey. I mean, I think like if you have to go to, like, for the full resort experience.
To actually
I mean,
feel
we weren't
it.
Really engaging with many of the staff there.
That's true.
So I think that in that respect you didn't. But everyone I talked to and engaged with, except for I think one guy when we were getting onto the monorail, I think he had a little bit of an attitude. But everyone else I thought was nice, and you know, if you smiled at them, they smiled back. Some of them smiled at you before you smiled at them. I mean, it was definitely a cozy environment.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And obviously there's a lot that can be done in that park depending on age.
Yeah.
You know, if you have older kids, like Senevine's so young that mostly what we did was she just sort of saw things. We did take her on the Jungle Cruise.
Yes, we did.
She was okay with that until she got sprayed with water. Then she was no longer okay with that.
Oh, she at the end she was sad that it was over. That's when she started crying.
Oh, is that what it was? She
yeah.
said, please don't end this cruise. Okay.
Yeah.
Clear interpretation. Okay, fair enough. And then the rest of it was just sort of, you know, bringing her around, letting her look at the different sites and things. One thing that I was very happy about was there was a fireworks display. I was actually doing grading again. And while I was doing grading, there was a fireworks display going on where Clea and Christine and Senevine were. And Senevine loved the heck out of the fireworks. She wasn't scared by them at all. She thought they were great. And that's great because I like fireworks a lot too. So that was cool.
It's very baby friendly now. I mean, obviously because they have a lot of kids that come and a lot of parents with kids have
right.
babies. So there was a baby center where I was able to pump. And then there are rides where you can get fast passes specifically for parents. So you can do a handoff and you won't have to wait in line. So they do lots of things for people with disabilities.
And I was thinking about the fact that if you wanted, Disney has been consulted before on how to handle large crowds because who's been doing it more than Disney, right?
Right.
I mean, they know exactly. I don't know what they do in terms of security and things like that. Like they had this ridiculous cursory bag check when you first go in, which is really stupid. You know, you go in and you mm-hmm. show them your bag. They didn't even look in the zipper pocket of my bag. I could have packed C4 and whatever else I wanted in there and nobody would have noticed. But that's fine because I think that stuff is all silly window dressing anyway. I don't think it really helps Al-Qaeda to go attack Walt Disney World, frankly. And I think that the idea of what they do within the park, security within the park, I'm sure it's there, but it's certainly not evident.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good. That's obviously what you want. So these people are very well trained. I did notice that a lot of the rides had some, or not a lot of them, but there were a couple of them that had technical issues that might simply be been because of the number of people that was riding on
them.
Two
of them closed down. And I have to say, Christine never experienced this, but all the times I've gone there, I'd say about 50% of the time, Space Mountain is closed once during the day due to technical difficulties. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's inherent in the ride. It is a rickety old roller coaster. And Pirates of the Caribbean was closed once due to technical difficulties. I mean, that does happen on occasion, and I don't know if that is, as Greg said, because of this scope. I mean, when you have tens of thousands of people going through there in one day.
Right. And there's also entertainment. There are also shows going on all over the place and there's obviously lots of food in different places that you can get as well. A couple of problems with Disney related to that are important, though. First of all, cost. Disney World is not cheap. It is expensive. Yes, you can get deals. Yes, if you're a Florida resident. Yes, if you're a AAA member, blah, 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 blah. I know all the situations, but still, it is not what I would call particularly accessible for people to get into. It is expensive, and everything that you get in there costs. You can't bring things in there with you, so you need to buy things like, say, bottled water. And
you
all of those things
in there with you.
What do you mean? You can't bring in liquids. No, you can't. You're told not to at the gate.
At least you can bring in food.
Well, okay. But I think that most people are going to have to,
right.
you know, get stuff during the
but
day.
But I do have to say that the
and
prices,
that's when it's kind of an enclosed
the prices
space.
Aren't as bad, let's say, at a baseball park.
No, that's true. I mean, that's true. There's certainly
not as expensive
as those things.
You get a bottle of water for $2 compared to, like, at a baseball park where it'd be $4 or $5.
Yeah, no, that's true. No, I mean, keeping in mind that the baseball parks we're talking about mostly are New York, the Yankees and the Red Sox, who have, like, the most expensive tickets, basically, in the country. But, right. Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, that's true. But I still think that the expense is a concern, especially given the number of people they have running through there on a daily basis. And they all the different parks makes the, I mean, it does feel a little bit overwhelming, you know? I mean, you walk in there, and first of all, it was just packed with people. Now, granted, yes, that's because it's peak season, but nonetheless, it does affect my feel for the park when I can't move because I'm just stuck behind people.
Yeah, I kind of feel like people should go for like one day, figure out if they like it, and then if they do, you have to spend a week there.
Yeah,
so you can have days where you're chilling for part of the day or the whole day, just laying out by the pool, and then you have like time to go to the different resorts.
They've done a good job, I think, in getting the rides such that they have a new system called Fast Pass where you can go and actually get a ticket ahead of time, mm-hmm. and then you come back within a certain time, a few hours from then, and then you walk right to the front of the line to do the ride. Now, that's right. Great. They haven't worked out all the kinks with it, because in many cases, you can only get one at a time, depending on the time frame,
right.
And that's kind of defeats the purpose. I mean, then you end up going on two rides or something the whole day. But still, it's a much better idea than just having everybody stand outside in line for an hour and a half. You know, the regular standby lines often were 90 minutes. I mean, it's just ridiculous for a ride that's going
to
last.
They were anywhere from 30 to 90 minutes.
And they're you know, for a 3-minute ride or 4-minute ride. So,
right.
So that's something which is an issue and has always been an issue with Disney World. But and then, of course, there are all these other things that we didn't go to. We didn't go to Animal Kingdom. We didn't go to Epcot.
Yeah, we didn't go to these other things.
We just did the Magic Kingdom. And so that part of it was certainly interesting. It's got a lot of international flavor to it as well. People come from all over the world to go to Disney World, obviously. And we went on a very nice day weather-wise. So that was kind of good. And they've also, I should say, in terms of amenities, so they've thought all this out very well in terms of the structure of the park. So what do you want to say for rating?
I feel like we should just review Magic Kingdom. And I would give it... Because, you know, there is all those other things. So reviewing just Magic Kingdom, I would say a 7.
Okay. That's fine. A 7. Not my favorite thing, but it was fun.
I know that, like, if you don't like Disney, it might not be the place for you. And
if you're worried about the expense.
It is expensive. But again, you know, you get to ride, for people that don't know, you get to ride any number of rides during that entire day.
The 3 you can get on because of the lines.
No, if you plan it better, you can do it. Okay. Anyway, so that's Disney. That's Magic Kingdom.
That's Magic Kingdom of Disney. So we would say a 7 out of 10 for them. And if you have kids, especially, if you like Disney, you have to go. And if you're sort of neutral about Disney, well, then you might go. And you'd have to think about it with your kids and all that kind of stuff.
If you're apathetic, you're like, I don't know. I could go. I could not.
Then that's good. So 7 out of 10 for Magic Kingdom in Disney World.
Okay.
All right. Last thing we have on the docket for today is Mr. Ron's Basement.
Welcome to Mr. Ron's Basement. This is Mr. Ron, and you are in the basement where you were just listening to King Oliver and his orchestra and their 1929 Victor record, I've Got That Thing. Join us today as we hear all about things. So, don't touch that iPod. We'll be right back.
And this was submitted to us for review by the aforementioned Mr. Ron. And he said that this basement is a little more than a month away from our 1,000th episode, which he capitalizes all the words, by the way, I like that, of reading the funniest stories from the public domain. It continues to be researched in depth and is the first podcast on iTunes to hit the 1,000 episode mark. Boy, amen to that, since we've just hit 57 here.
Yeah.
If you subscribe via iTunes, you can hit the Get All button to jam up your hard drive about 6 gigabytes worth.
Oh,
so do check it out if you get a chance. And
that was back beginning of February. So he's actually reached it by now. He's reached the 1,000 mark.
That's right. He's reached the 1,000 mark. And there are basically two websites for this, and I'm going to talk about that when we get to the rating. The first is to actually get the shows themselves, you go to slapcast.com, slapcast.com/users/revry. And you get this page, which is basically a huge scroll-down page split into small little sections, at the end of which is something where you can get something on iTunes, or you can click on it to download downloaded directly.
But you can click to that from the main site.
You can click to that from the main site, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I just, that site itself is not, that's got some issues for me. I because I just found the look of it to be very, very un-user friendly. And it's the kind of thing that if you didn't know that there was another site and you were looking just for the podcast part of it, you think, I'm not going to scroll down through 600 some odd pages to get to episode number 658.
Okay.
So that was one concern I had about that. His other website, which is the one where he actually, his blog where he talks about the episodes themselves and various things about research and so on, is at Mr. Ron's Basement, MisterRonsBasement.blogspot.com. And there he talks about various things related to the stories. He talks about the experience of recording them. He responds to comments and things of that kind. So that's really where you get all the meat of the show, I guess, that's actually being recorded in written form.
Right. So each of these episodes is about 12 minutes long, and
about
most
that.
Of them have one or two of these, what do you call all them, olden days?
They're all sort of old humor stories. I don't think they're all American. A lot of them are American humorists, yeah. So American humor stories, many that were reprinted in newspapers
the 18,
of the late 19th centuries, things like that. And they're all in the public domain, which is why he can read them out without anybody suing him.
Right.
And so, and he's got, I mean, 1,000? So we're talking about, he's probably got to have over 12 or 1,300 stories, because some of these he reads too.
Right.
So,
and he has kind of that olden style voice. And he will do most of the different voices for most of the characters.
Right.
And
very Charles Dickens, you know, if you remember our review of that. That's Charles Dickens-esque, I would
say. Yeah. So for the most part, really, the only thing is if you like, think you might like American humorous stories from the 1800s, give it a shot.
because of our wide base of our audience.
Yeah.
Like, I really need
American
humorous stories.
You never know. I mean, listen, you might find, if you find that boring, then you might not like it. But he does a really great job of reading the stories. Our only concern is that since most of it is his voice, and he'll go from setting up to narrating, it can be confusing as to when the actual story starts.
This is a show which cries out for transitions.
Right.
There, you know, between, he always has at the beginning,
he'll say something like, don't
touch that iPod, we'll be right back. But then
there'll be like 1 second,
and then he'll
start.
Yeah, or he'll say, and this is a story about this, and then a second, and then, and so, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, wait a minute, what just happened here?
Yeah.
So there has to be some kind of transition. And he has musical interludes, which he's picked out.
But usually puts at the front or the end.
So all he needs to do is add one that he could put in the middle between the time that he says, now this story, do a 5 second bumper, and then go into the story. And that would help a lot to sort of subdivide it from one to the other, especially since, as far as we could tell, we listened to 3 or 4 of the shows from different time periods, from different times in the actual recording of the podcast. He is the only one who's ever reading. So there are no other voices to break it up. So without these musical interludes, you can often get confused about it. The stories themselves tend to have different levels of amusement. Again, it's kind of that 19th century, late 19th century humor. And part of the reason, and I kind of was thinking about this as an academic too, the part of the reason that these are not well-known people, or these are less well-known, or they're hidden treasures, they're hidden because they weren't that good to begin with.
So, in
some of these cases, the stories that he's reading are kind of, I mean, they're fine.
I think kind of what he says is that he tries to find ones that make the generation gap.
That make the transition.
But some of them, I think maybe most of them might not, unless you really like that style.
Unless you really like that style.
It is kind of like from the 1800s.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, I mentioned Charles Dickens, you know, Dickensian before, but there's a reason that Charles Dickens made it and some of these people didn't.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But having said that, though, that's only kind of a general statement, and obviously it doesn't refer to many of the individual stories. Many of them are amusing in that kind of old-style way. And I think that what I'm amazed at, I mean, this is an extraordinary amount of work. To be able to research and get this level of detail about these stories, and to be able to talk about the secrets of, you know, he mentions his latest blog entry is, we're familiar with the humorous stories of Max Adler, who wrote the most outrageously funny stories of all time in the 1870s. His real name was Charles Aber Clark. I mean, this is unbelievable. I'm not familiar with those things. And when, you know, I imagined late 19th century experts would be perhaps, but so that is really amazing. And I think that it's the kind of thing, I noticed one of the shows had an ad for public, I think it was it PBS or public radio, something like that.
I think it was like 498 or something.
This does fit that kind of a description. It's the kind of thing that would fit certain classes, I would think, even even about broadcasting or or things about kind of old style, even talking about copyright issues with public domain, I can see academic applications to this. And I'm very, very impressed with the level of research. Whether that translates into a really engaging show all the time, I don't know. It depends. I think some of them are probably more engaging than others. But it's not automatically good. It's not automatically terrible. It's somewhere in between with many of the shows based upon the story that he's reading. But it's an incredible amount of work. And I am in awe, frankly, of that level of work that he's able to do in terms of research. Oh, I'm sorry. And one other thing before you give the rating. My concern about the website. I do think that having a blog as one part of your website and then having this huge, massive page with shows on it, I think it could be better organized. Even if you're organizing it by category and you're saying, you know, here are the podcasts from this month or this month or this month, that would make it much easier. And especially with 1,000 shows, I mean, it's
Why do you think he desperately has to separate them? I didn't understand why he had a separate. Is it because of the amount of shows?
Well, no, I don't think he could put it on the blog spot, but he could get a WordPress site easily and he could then put it into categories like we do. Or even Libsyn or something like that. But I do think that, is just overwhelming. And it's going to make it difficult to get more people involved when they look at it and go, oh my God, how long has this been going on, right? So that's the one thing I would say is that that would make it more easy to navigate, I think. So, rating.
Oh, you go.
I feel like I've been going on the 7 train a lot this time, but I feel like 7 is where I want to go with this because I, although not every show is equally interesting, just the research alone is so staggering that that's impressive. And I do think this has a number of applications I could think of educationally. Plus, sometimes it is engaging. It just depends on the particular episode. So
yeah, I think I would say because he has to make those slight changes in the way that it's produced.
A 6, you said?
And they make some changes to the website, yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll say a 6 out of 10, but this is something which definitely we think you should check out.
It certainly
is family friendly.
And they're only 12 minutes, so we could listen to quite a few of them.
That's true. So maybe we'll get back to you having listened to 150 next week.
Yeah.
And then we'll only have 850 to go. Oh no. So we want to thank everyone for listening to us as always. Again, our apologies for taking so long to get this out. We will try to get the next one out sooner if our newborn and migrating cooperates.
Maybe we can put up some more pictures so they can see.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. We've had some people asking about it.
I think they'll forgive once they see how cute she is.
Right, exactly. And if they don't forgive, then we don't want you anyway. You hear us? Well, no, actually we do.
No, we
do. I was just kidding. All right, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See ya. The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!